Right, we continue in our study on the topical series studies, and tonight I want to look at border protection. One of the hotly debated issues of our day has one group upholding the need to protect the nation's borders from being overwhelmed by an influx of foreign people, and another group saying we have a responsibility to show kindness to the stranger, as we are exhorted to do in Scripture. And the debate gets very hot and intense at times. As we try and understand this issue, as we try and get our minds around how do we even begin thinking about this, firstly, it's important to remember that independent sovereign nations are God's design. He made them. There is biblical evidence of the existence of nations and their boundaries in Genesis chapter 10. So way back in the beginning, we've already got that evidence. In verse 10 of chapter 10, it talks about Nimrod's kingdom and his rule. In verse 19 of Genesis 10, it marks out the border of the land of Canaan. And in verse 32 of chapter 10, as it ends off, it says, "These were the families of the sons of Noah according to their generations in their nations. And from these the nations were divided on the earth after the flood." Okay, so these are the nations that were set up by God. That's how he divided up the earth. Thus, when you come to Genesis 11, the next chapter after chapter 10, the incident of the Tower of Babel, this was an international goal of making one focal point for every nation. It was basically a centralization of national power in one place. And God's swift destruction of this shows us his displeasure of it. He condemned it. In one foul swoop, he came down and said, "This is impossible. I've set up the nations, stay in your nations." And so he made it so that people would stay in their nations by confusing the language and driving them to their respective corners of the earth. Genesis 14 reveals different kings joining together for battle, each to attack other kingdoms. It's the story of Lot. Remember when he was taken captive? And the story tells that before Abraham went to rescue him, but you saw there was a number of kings united with their forces to attack another group of kings who had united. So some had united for self-defense and some had united for the purpose of conquering. What that's demonstrating to us is the existence of these nations that are already functioning right from early on in the book of Genesis. As you read through the Bible, even a casual reading of the Bible, it will leave you in no doubt as to the centrality and the significance of different nations in the outworking of God's plan. This is what he ordained, the different nations to function. And that this was due to God's ordering is also inescapable, as Acts seals up the argument by telling us in Acts 17 verse 26 that God has made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on the face of the earth, and he has determined their pre-appointed times and boundaries of their dwellings. Okay, so there's no doubt in our minds, there shouldn't be, that nations are God's purpose. And when you add to this Romans 13, where we are told that God has ordained nations to have civil leaders and has empowered them to carry out certain duties, and there can be no doubt that he has established national boundaries and given individual nations the authority to protect their sovereignty. Just as he's given the family responsibility to protect itself, just as he's given individual churches the responsibility to protect themselves, he has given the whole nation a responsibility and authority to protect itself. The state has the responsibility from God to protect its citizens from foreign and domestic violence and crime, to punish the evildoers and reward those who do good. Simple. By what standard do they determine what is evil and what is good? By what standard? If not biblical law, you show me the standard. Remember, there's no neutrality. And the unregenerate are suppressing the truth in unrighteousness. The truth about what? What is the unregenerate suppressing the truth about? About everything. Everything they don't personally like and agree with, they suppress it. They hold it down, they seek to change it. Everyone doesn't believe the same thing. Every nation doesn't believe the same thing. So real sustainable liberty and prosperity for the whole of a nation flow out of a commitment to living in terms of God's revelation. There is no other sustainable prosperity and liberty other than living in terms of God's word. Oppression and poverty flow out of the predominant beliefs that a nation holds to. When a nation is in poverty and when there is oppression, they are merely reflecting what the people believe. The predominance of the people, not every single person. You can have a person in there who disagrees with that, but the predominant mindset has taken on that thinking. And that's why they have now reduced themselves to a situation of poverty and oppression. A nation's culture is a manifestation of what they believe. So when you have a depraved culture, when you have a mentality that is unproductive and not moving forward, it stems from what they truly believe in the depths of their being. You see, prosperity and liberty don't just happen by chance. And likewise, oppression and poverty don't just come upon a people without explanation. Oh, how did this happen to us? Thus, you can have a prosperous nation with great liberty surrounded by a poverty-stricken nation who also have great oppression. You can have that because of the different beliefs, the different worldviews that exist in those respective nations. Every one of them, however, is the product of what they believe. Nations can also change their beliefs over time, and so you can also have nations that are in decline. So they can be moving from a position of prosperity and liberty to a position of more and more poverty and oppression and lack of freedom. And you've got nations doing that. Europe is moving in that direction. I dare say the United States is moving in that direction. And yet the United States is still a lot free and a lot more prosperous than any other nation in the world. Now, when you get an influx of people from another nation or from different nations, many different nations, or into a single nation, they can be fleeing oppression or they can be fleeing poverty and hoping to start life over in the new nation in a context where they have liberty and thus opportunity to prosper. It's usually from the oppressive nations that people are fleeing to prosperous nations, from oppression that they're fleeing to a place of liberty. Why was the Berlin Wall built? It was to stop traffic in one direction. It was not two-directional traffic that they were worried about. They were stopping the people moving from the East Berlin, communist, oppressive, poverty-stricken nation, or city at that stage, because it was a city divided in half, into the western side, which was prosperous and had liberty. And so they built the wall to keep the eastern people in the east. You see, the worldview of different nations are very different in how they understand things. They don't all have the same worldview. So they have a view of life that is very different. And the worldview determines how they act in each area of life. Thus, when you have a large influx of people from one or more nations into a single different nation, you have different beliefs about God, you have different beliefs about justice, about liberty, about responsibility, all impacting the nation they're moving into. There's an impact upon that nation. So how do you protect yourself from having your worldview usurped and having a different worldview take over? How do you stop yourself becoming a Marxist country? The USA has about 314 million people, of which probably less than half that are eligible to vote. So let's be generous, say 140, 145 million. China has 1.34 billion people and could easily organize 200 million of their citizens to move to the USA. Easily. They wouldn't even notice the vacuum in China. In fact, they would probably welcome it. So let's send these people across and let the Americans give them citizenship as they arrive. How would that impact the next election? India has 1.24 billion people. Surprising, huh? 100 million less than China. And they could easily spare 300 million and send them to America as well. India could also send 100 million to Mexico, by the way. Mexico has 114 million people. Maybe they got half of that would be voting people. Send 100 million Indians across there, all eligible to vote. What's it going to happen to Mexico? You've got another India there. Well, what's going to happen to the United States? We've got 200 million Chinese and 300 million Indians. Congress is going to look a little bit different as to the mindset of the kind of people they're going to place in Congress. The Democrats and the Republicans are going to have to join together, make an alliance so that they can have three members in Congress and try and do the pushback and regain the old America in the good old days under Obama. You see, fundamental to protecting a nation is protecting its worldview, which entails protecting its religious convictions and its commitment to God's revealed truth. When people claim it is possible and preferable for states to remain neutral in civil affairs, meaning that there is no commitment to any dogma or standard, they are not being honest, but seeking to destroy the existing order. That's what they're seeking to overthrow. It's neutral. Let's not bring any dogma into the civil realm. Let's only put in here a neutral understanding. We've got neutral laws and we'll leave God out of it. Everybody's God is left out of it. And we just have this idea of man putting thoughts together as to how civil society should function. Their objective there is to destroy what is presently in existence. So a call to be neutral in the civil realm is a call to overthrow what is. And there are calls from some prominent Christians in the USA saying that the way to solve this thorny issue of illegal aliens who have come to the USA is to apply a biblical passage, namely, the stranger who dwells among you shall be to you as one born among you, and you shall love him as yourself, for you are strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. Leviticus 19:34. They're quoting that verse. The one stranger among you must be treated as one born among you. I am the Lord your God. Is this the definitive word on what love would look like for a stranger? Because we told you in Leviticus 19 to love the stranger as ourself. And that means to treat him as one born among you. But this is not the definitive word on how to love a stranger. Because other passages make qualifications with respect to the rights given to strangers. For example, the Ammonites and the Moabites were prevented from having any political or religious influence in the assembly of the Lord even to the 10th generation. Deuteronomy 32 verse 2. These verses are not contradicting each other. Treat him as one born among you. Yes, treat him as one born among you. But he has no influence in the assembly of God unto the 10th generation. Some commentators say that means never, but it says unto the 10th generation. That's just a long time. That was Deuteronomy 32 verse 2. The Egyptians and the Edomites were barred from influence in Israel until the 3rd generation. Because you dwelt among them. You dwelt amongst the Egyptians. You were in their land. So they just wait till the 3rd generation. But they have to wait. That's verse 8 of Deuteronomy 23. After strangers have been living in Israel for 3 or more generations, they would have been significantly impacted by what? The worldview. By the evangelization, by the outreach, by the customs, by all those things. I mean, 3 generations, those people's minds had changed. They had begun to understand how it's functioned. They'd experienced the justice. They'd experienced the prosperity. This is God's purpose and plan. And having experienced those things, their perceptions and their ties to their previous ideas, they've been challenged. They've been shaken. They've been exposed to the biblical culture of morality and truth. Thus, when you look back at Leviticus 19, exhorting to treat strangers as those born among you, it is clear that it is not meaning that they are to be regarded as Israelites with all the privileges that are associated with being an Israelite. The focus of Leviticus 19, I suggest to you, has to do with justice. Strangers were to be treated justly. That is, with the same standard of justice that the Israelites used for each other. An Israelite couldn't steal from a stranger. And there couldn't be a different standard of judgment upon the stranger if he was caught stealing than would have been placed upon the Israelite if he was caught stealing. Remember, Israel wasn't a welfare state. Charity and help rested in the hands of the individual and the church. Charity is an act of mercy. In our modern context, where many prominent pastors are quoting Leviticus 19:34 and saying that it is binding upon the U.S. to grant amnesty to illegal immigrants, they are totally silent about the other passages in the Bible that need to be used to define the boundaries of what would be biblical in the context. What would truly be biblical in this context? You can't just quote one verse. For example, they're not criticizing the welfare state that we have become. They're not quoting 2 Thessalonians 3 verse 10, "If a man will not work, neither shall he eat." They're not taking into consideration the unlawful practice the state has assumed of providing free education and free medicine along with all the other freebies that the state likes to give out. There's not one word against that. There's not one reprimand. There's not one. They're just saying this would be biblical and not even addressing all these other issues. And they are certainly not saying anything about the generational wait before people can have an impact on the political direction of a country. That's silent. To offer unrestricted amnesty to anybody so that they become an American citizen is a plan to erode the very foundations that made America what it is. In other words, it's an attempt to change America, and it will not be for the best. We should show kindness to strangers and help them, if possible, to prosper in the United States. But this is very difficult to do due to the state's interference in every realm of life, including business and commerce and welfare. All these things, very difficult to do. The complexity of addressing this problem comes from the state's intrusive invasion into areas she has no right to be involved in. Thus, it is hard to say, okay, how do we address this? Because you're caught with what the ideal should be, but that's really impractical in this time and age because there's such a pressing need. So how do you actually bridge the gap and say, well, this is the ideal, but this is what we should do in this situation? So it's very difficult. I believe that we need to be kind to the stranger and that they should be given the opportunity to work and prosper. But the setup what has been put on our plate as we're trying to negotiate through this thing, as we're trying to help, as we're trying to fix the problem. The setup is incredibly complex to the degree that I do not believe the problem can be solved as it is. Cannot be solved. What the state has done, I'll try to illustrate. I want you to solve this problem. Well, it cannot be solved because the way you've set up the whole picture, the whole parameters, it's unsolvable. So I'll use an illustration. Here's a surgeon, the highest qualified surgeon in the land, and his specialty is bypass surgery on the heart. And he's done hundreds of these successfully. And you remove him from his theater, you remove him from his equipment, you remove him from his team of workers and replace it with a bunch of thugs from the street and say, here's a man who needs bypass surgery, please do it. Can you help him? Can you save him? Can you fix this problem? Say, okay, we'll give you a scalpel and we'll give you an operating gown. Is that help? The mess you have put me in here is such to the degree that this is now impossible to perform. You see, we're a nation that's already staggering due to the burden of government-guaranteed education, food stamps, medical care, and add on and on to that. Add another 11 million people into the mix, give all those benefits, and you're asking to destroy a nation. That's what you're asking to do. It's impossible. So if a legislator called me tonight, said, Derek, man, I've been listening to you on sermon audio. An amnesty is going through, but I can draft some legislation to go along with it. What could I do? What should I do? What do you recommend? I'd say, here's Bill's number. Okay, this is what I'd suggest. And I don't claim to have all the answers, but this is what I'd suggest. I'd say to him, sir, the welfare state needs to be dismantled, which among other things includes ultimately removing public education, food stamps, free medical service, and all these things provided by the state. Individuals and private organizations can give whatever they want for free, but the state cannot. And in the light of that longer-term goal, sir, that you're aiming at in removing all these things, I want you to institute legislation that goes along with the amnesty bill that will reflect that. The amnesty must be given upon the presumption that the people wanting to stay in the United States are not wanting to be freeloaders. They truly want to take advantage of the opportunity in the country. They want to work hard and they want to prosper. They want to just have that opportunity. Thus, the terms of them getting amnesty is them understanding and agreeing to having no claim to any state freebies, no free education, no free green stamps, food stamps, no free medical, no free anything. They agree to that and say, yes, we're not here for any of that stuff. We're here for this one primary purpose, and that is to take advantage of the opportunities. They also have to understand and agree that they will not have the vote for about 3 generations. However, they will be assured that they will receive the same standard of justice that every American citizen receives. You'll be subject to the same laws. We will not take advantage of you. We will not subject you to anything that no American citizen would be subjected to. Criminals will be deported without amnesty, and if they return, they shall be executed as incorrigible criminals. If you can execute an incorrigible child, you have to be able to execute an incorrigible criminal. True justice should also be reestablished in the whole U.S. system so that biblically sanctioned capital crimes are again enforced, along with other biblical sanctions like thieves paying back more than they stole, and those kinds of things. So yes, sir, this is what you need to be institute. This is your long-term goals, but this is what you can institute now as something that can offer these people true grace, a true hand of support and love and caring for my neighbor and showing the stranger compassion and care. With the amnesty people not being given free state education, this opens massively, doesn't it, for Christians to minister into that area. There's no free education from the state? No. But huge, huge opportunity for the church, for Christians to step up to that and say, hey, welfare is the same thing. Huge opportunity to step up and move into that. If our leaders are pursuing this giving of amnesty for humanitarian reasons rather than their own political agenda, then they would not balk at these things, at there being no freebies, at there being no voting ability. They wouldn't balk at those things. They would say, yes, this is good. Everybody is protected. Because what they've been given is an opportunity to work hard and to prosper. So in order to preserve any godly society, border protection is absolutely essential. Any questions or comments, clarifications that are needed?